Again, Channel 12 News.
They come talk me out.
Is this a private video? Are you working for somebody or?
Well, it's for me, but anything I do is open to anybody.
I'm Abby. I work at the commissioner's office and you're?
Scott Smith.
Hi.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hi, Scott. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I haven't seen you since the election, so.
Well, we're usually out and about, but I haven't seen you lately.
Oh, they staying in and eating.
Our season's one.
Meals.
I've got to meet with you.
One must have your priorities.
Okay. I'll tell you, the holidays are coming, whether we can. That's right. I have them babies done for the weekend.
Abby, are you coming to the signing? I'm just saying, are you sure? I just wanted to hear that you are. I don't care.
Yeah.
doesn't know you are.
Oh, trip there, Beth.
There's still travel or there's still students or students?
No, switched over to Creighton. It was too much for him. Did everybody sign?
Pardon?
You were a poll worker. No, you tried to be a poll worker. So much.
Well, I was the first year you guys started. I was doing your running text.
I step forward and volunteering.
Yeah.
Service, anyway. All right. Anybody over here? Mary Beth, you already got one. That's right. You place that. I'm sorry. Thanks.
Do you have yours, Beth?
Do you need again? Do you
who's staying right with him? Probably my husband. Hello, David?
Yes.
David, this is Denise Jones calling.
Yes. Can you hear?
Yes.
Do I sound okay?
Yes, yes, you do. I now have to put Greg on. Okay, so hold on for a minute, and we have to connect with him, okay?
Yep.
Please dial the station number you require. Please dial...
Workshop. Okay, do we have everybody? What do I have to do to get to? I'll just hit that. Okay, so David and Greg, are you both there?
Yes, ma'am. I am here.
Very good. Okay. Okay, so now I also want you to understand if this is being recorded, auto recording as well as a video recording. We have two commissioners here. I have the county solicitor. There is an audience of people here also. So I just want you to be aware of that. Also, the newspaper reporter is also here. So just wanted you to have an idea of there's maybe about 12 other people that are here in the room with us. Okay.
Hello.
Oh, there. You put it through there. Okay. So now both of you are still there. Greg? Nope. David? Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, it's very good.
Okay, there they were.
Yeah, you went quiet for a while, but I can hear you again now.
Okay, so can we hear both of you? David and Greg, are you both there? Okay, are you there now?
Yes.
Okay, both of you are there?
Yes, we're here.
Okay, there you are. All right. We were trying to put it on another kind of phone, but that didn't work, so that's why we were going silent there for a little bit. Okay, so we are now going to get started.
This is Tim Brooks. I'm the commissioner chairman, now the chairman of the election board, and Vince is also here, too, who's now one of the election board members and the commissioner. This is to be a workshop. There's no agenda, no minutes being taken, no public comment. This is just for us. We had some questions about the letters that Greg had sent and needed some answers, needed some clarification, if that's okay.
Sure. Have you had a chance to review, by the way, David Clark's report?
Yes. We reviewed that also. Yes.
Okay, that's also quite comprehensive.
Yes, exactly. I think it's more specific about some of the things. So, I guess to start, the letter, November 15th, and I think Greg and David both had this in their reports and letters. Remote access was seemingly made during periods of time unassociated with this election. What exactly does that mean?
What we have going on here is the Unity system, the systems used to tabulate the results, basically has been installed for, for a few years. And so if you look back at that, that system, according to the, you know, the documents provided by the Secretary of the Commonwealth, should not have network connectivity. That should be a standalone system. That's in one of their reports that contains the set of requirements under which they certified Unity to run. If you look at that system, it has a whole bunch of different things that enable network communication. It has something called BNC on it that allows remote access. It also has remote desktop enabled. We also saw, you know, that it had been used to print over a network to, I think it was one of the local hospitals, it looked like, actually, one of those hospital systems. So all of that, you know, was stuff that shouldn't have happened on a machine that you really don't want to be at risk of either being attacked over the internet or contracting some virus over the internet or anything like that.
Okay, some clarification now. Greg, you're the actual person who does forensic auditing, I was told. That's correct?
So the way this sort of worked is I looked at the system with respect to the operating system issue, with respect to the network issues, to that chunk of things, and then Dave drove down into the area involving the actual Unity software.
Okay, good.
So when it came to the electromechanics, that's where Dave really drove down and got to depth. When it came to issues involving the environment in which that software operated, that's where I did most of the work.
Okay. If we would need to see, like you said, connected to the hospital, you'd be able to show us that?
I could show you how that would, yeah, I could show you that.
Okay,
and what you would see there is you would see the names of several printers and their location on a hospital network.
Yeah, that kind of perplexes us because there's no reason for the hospital to be connected to anything here at the county, but that's interesting.
Yeah, it looked like somebody guessing wildly for a moment. Looks like somebody may have a job in a hospital system, something like that, was using a printer.
Okay.
You know, one of those locations. So you're right, there's no reason that shouldn't be.
Okay, and when you say network, you can mean networking between, because I know we talked to the computer person that does the work on election night. He networks the Unity to a laptop and to another system in another room to show the results. And that's the kind of networking you're speaking of then? That would come up as that?
Right. So first of all, that type of network is not allowed for one of these systems.
The report from
the secretary says it doesn't get connected to a network and explicitly says local network or otherwise.
Okay, but does that mean an outside network? This is between computers, though. But that's
right. And so the printer said that it looked like it was connected to.
Okay.
Identify themselves by their names. Okay. As printers that are not on, you know, that are not county printers.
Okay.
That's what we know is by the names of those printers, they don't look like county printers.
Okay.
And we know that the system shouldn't be connected to a network at all. Mm-hmm. Yet it was.
Okay.
So that's what we know about that.
Okay. And that would happen, that comes from the Unity tabulation machine, so that would happen whether we use the DREs or if we use the counter with the paper ballots. That's correct.
I haven't looked at the paper ballot system.
Right.
But my feeling there is the same thing. If you've got a system that is calculating, that's counting, counting the votes.
Okay.
You want that system to be in isolation. You don't want that system to be come in contact with the outside world.
And he did tell us he connected some of the networks together. I mean, he networked some of the computers together to make it easier for him. And we are going to correct that. Instead of running between the rooms, he just connected the networks. He connected the computers and he networked them, and that can't be done. So, all right. So the software installed in the system used for purposes other than associated with the Unity server.
Right, and again, this machine has a very special purpose. Right, it's in effect counting the votes. And doesn't need to do anything else.
But that's not true.
It doesn't need things like word processors. It doesn't need things that provide remote access.
But Greg, that's not true yet.
It doesn't need any of that software at all. It shouldn't be there because once you start doing that, you're exposing the machine to more uses, and that means you're exposing it to more risk.
Greg, this
you
is Denise. Can I just ask you a question, though? But that's not true.
That machine is not just used to tabulate votes. That is the machine that we actually use to code the election. That's why all of that software is on that Unity. The Unity system is not just one system. It does everything. It has all of those software programs on it. So it is not just used to tabulate. That election reporting manager is on
that. The machine should have via digital and remote access.
I'm sorry.
There's absolutely no reason for that, because if that machine allows remote access, then we don't know what it's being used for.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, I understand that part.
There's no reason for that.
Yeah.
And I think if we took a look at the programs that you needed in order to run Unity, mm-hmm. and instead of install programs that were there, those are two very different sets of software. I'm going to defer to David there as to what software is needed to run Unity versus what was there, because he looked at Unity a lot more deeply than I did. But the software profile there was quite large.
So you or David could send us a list of what should not be on there? Would that be feasible for you to do for us or not?
Well, I think the right list is actually the list of what should be there.
Exactly. Right. That's what I mean. Yes. Yes.
Shouldn't be there.
Exactly.
I think the right list is, here is the set of software that's required to run Unity, and nothing else really should be
installed. And take everything. Okay. That's a better answer. Yes. Okay. And you could do that for us. Let us know what that would be. Or David could
do
that.
How do you feel on that one?
I can answer this question on the spot, but at some point I'd like to speak for a couple of minutes to do a brief, like a 5-minute summary.
Sure, absolutely. That's not a problem.
Right, so in answer to this particular question, one of the things that was observed on that machine is Google Desktop, and that was, I do not believe, though we didn't verify this in detail, that did not shift with the machine. And so that's an example of something that somebody installed at some point, I think, as for some convenience purpose, but which is not part of the interview. In terms of providing a list of software, I do not believe that the Secretary of the Commonwealth has explicitly provided a list of exactly these files or anything like that. My understanding is that their model is that you start with, you know, a blank vendor system of Windows, and then install on the software provided by ESMS, and you know, then stop, and you do not install anything else ever. That might be an issue where we can attempt to clarify with the Secretary of the Commonwealth. Do they provide a file list of a, you know, installed configuration or not? And, you know, if not, is there direction as I survive? Are you just take a fresh installed Windows and add these big things to it from ESNS and then stop?
So ESNS or the state would give us the answer to that. I'm sorry, so ESNS or the state should give us an answer to that question then?
I think that I think probably the productive thing to do there would be to ask the Secretary of the Commonwealth's office, you know, what exactly should be installed on the machine to be in compliance with the Secretary's certification.
Okay.
Now you realize.
Let me ask you one other question there. The coding for the election, should that be happening on the Unity server, or should that be happening somewhere else and then those files moved on to the Unity server?
That's where everything happens, on the Unity server. And do you
happen to, I know where they did happen, I'm curious where they should happen. Do you happen to know that, Dan?
So the system is designed for, the model of the system is for there to be designed as one system where jurisdiction information, that is precinct information, is entered, candidate information is entered, then ballot layout is chosen, then files are produced to put onto the various voting equipment. So that's viewed as sort of a single stream of consciousness, as it were. And then the expectation is that the election is run and then the results are fed
back into that machine. Now, the system is designed by the vendor so that the fan-out part, that is, once you have all the information and actually loading it onto various pieces of equipment for the election day, and then collecting votes back, so that can be done by multiple machines working together in many ways. But not all of those ways are legal in Pennsylvania, okay? So the system has the capability to do many things that we are not supposed to be doing in Pennsylvania. So I'll quote briefly from the Secretary's certification. It's a simple sentence that says, Unity must be operated as a standalone system without network connection, local or otherwise. Okay, and I don't see any way to interpret that that is consistent with, you know, a large number of machines and multiple rooms or anything like that. And in particular, the thing that we observed basically was the Unity machine had to have been on a network with some other machine, we're going to call it X, and that machine X had clearly been connected at some point to a network that was not run by the county. Okay, and the problem with that sort of thing is if machine X, while connected to some other network, picks up a virus and then is connected to the same network as the Unity machine, then the Unity machine could be infected. Okay? So it basically needs to be an isolation of that machine from anything that could be threatened, which means any machine which was connected to any unknown or uncontrolled network.
And that was done. We found out from Terry did do some remote work and then brought it in and connected to the Unity.
So Ray and I discovered sort of phenomena, okay, which can happen or the original complicated place, but the phenomena observed are strongly indicate that the Unity machine was on a network, okay, that was. It involved a machine which was on some other network that was not owned by the county. And yeah. It's easy enough to produce, you know, like a screenshot of a list of printers.
Sure.
And I think it'll be pretty clear from that what we mean.
Well, yeah, and you're right about that. Like I said, we discussed this with Terry, and Terry did say he does do some remote work when he's other places, doing other jobs in the evenings and at home, and then he brings his computer in here or a flash drive, then he downloads that work, and that will be stopped from now on. And that would correct that problem, I'm assuming. If we just use the, everything's done here at the county, just on the machine, nothing's done with a remote, another laptop or another computer that's not part of the county's.
So if, I think the model that I understand most clearly is a model involving one machine and, you know, no network at all.
Yes.
Okay? So it is possible that there are, in terms of, you know, machines, like if there are, you know, two machines that need to be both running Unity and not running any other software connected, it may be that the Secretary has a policy that authorizes that. But I guess the way to look at this is, you need to start from what be certified in Pennsylvania is being allowed to do. And definitely, I mean, if you look at the Secretary, remote access, just the global internet is seen as a big concern. And the reason is, among the reasons,
are you not there anymore?
Dave, we can't hear you.
We lost David.
Okay, so I'll talk for a moment. Do you mind trying to get David back?
Yeah, we'll try.
Yeah, but if you're both on the same phone, so probably have to try to, and he wouldn't know a number.
Well, if you're on your cell phone, the children never call back. Maybe with their
phone. While we're in a break, can I ask a question of the solicitor?
Pardon me?
I can talk for a moment while you work on getting...
Well, yeah, but I don't know that you're going to be able to...
So, we're always listening.
Okay, so hold on for a minute, please.
Sure.
Please dial the station number you require. Okay, so now is everybody there again? No?
I'm here.
David? Greg? Both are there. Okay, we're good.
We're here. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I think that it deals on network connectivity, and
yes.
I guess I read
the communication when you is where you were.
Yeah, I recommend starting with the Secretary's recommendation, and, you know, I can quote for a couple of sentences. You know, Unity runs on an ordinary Windows laptop or desktop. Such a machine could be connected to the Internet, have a wireless card, Bluetooth interface, or be attached to a local or wide area network. All of these represent security risks of varying risk. Unity makes no effort to restrict or even monitor these possible connections. The configuration of the Unity computer is therefore uncontrolled and unauditable. That is, after an election, it is impossible to determine what modifications might have been made by an intruder, virus, spyware, or other species of malicious code. In fact, if the computer on which Unity runs has been connected to the Internet for even a brief time, there can no longer be any assurance that the system has not been corrupted. So that's a quote from the Secretary of the Commonwealth. So this is viewed as a serious issue, and in the case of this particular machine, probably it means that that machine needs to be reinstalled so that it can be in a known boot configuration.
Okay.
Then disconnecting this machine as it is from the network, I think is probably not sufficient. I think it needs to be not only disconnected from networks, but also, I think, reinstalled because it might have been compromised.
And Dave, I would agree with you 100% on that. I think that machine has been around so long and subject to any number of management practices that it probably shouldn't have been subject to, that the only thing to do is to reinstall. And I think that the right model is to you know, install Windows from a known good, you know, from a known good vendor CD, install Unity from whatever CD or DVD it comes from, and not install anything else unless it absolutely has to be installed. And I suspect that if you install Windows and you install the Unity disk, nothing else needs to be installed. But if something else needs to be installed, I think that the right procedure there is to very broadly get approval for that, and that's not something that one person should quickly do.
Okay.
What Greg means by that is that if something else needs to be installed on the machine, that needs to involve a written documentation of that event and what the reason was and where the software came from. The one thing I guess I can imagine being the case is printer drivers. Right. If this machine actually needs to print something, and it's not clear to me that that's the case, then it's possible to, you know, print to a file and burn the file to a CD and take the CD to another machine that prints. But if this machine itself absolutely needs to print, then documentation for that should be prepared, and it, you know,
whatever software was installed on the machine should at least be archived somewhere so that it can be checked and so on. And this is not the sort of thing that should be done without prior thought.
Okay. And yeah, my understanding is what you're discussing did happen to make things more streamlined, that, you know, things were printed off or connected for that reason. So, and that.
They were done for that reason. They were also done for other reasons. Like I said, there was other software there that when Dave and I looked at it, you know, it was pretty clear to us was not involved in
right.
in an essential election process. Visible to one, I guess, was a classic example there.
Sure.
You know, and the thing about it is that it's tempting. We all use Windows systems every day, and it's tempting to apply the same management practices here. But it gets complicated, and you don't want to think too hard about these things. You want to keep them all very simple. Because let's say for a moment that, you know, this machine has to be isolated, right? So we isolate this machine from the network to make sure the boogeyman doesn't hack his or her way into it. Well, now what this means is that this machine is not getting everyday virus updates from, you know, McAfee or Symantec or whoever the provider happens to be. So now this machine is more brittle than an average machine to viruses. And now you take a thumb drive and plug it into your work machine, and, you know, you catch a virus on that work machine that an hour later your work machine scans for viruses and clears it away. But now you plug that into this machine, and this machine doesn't have up-to-date virus software, it's separated from the network. And now suddenly, you know, it's closed. And so you really want to keep it simple and minimize the interaction with the outside world. You know, the network is a very easy way to expose it to the outside world. But also, when we're doing things like moving things up and back by a thumb drive, there's a risk associated with that.
Okay.
And so we really want to have this machine in isolation, use this machine in isolation, you know, sit down, add it locally, and perform the configuration. And as much as possible, you know, export things, you know, from the machine in a clean way, like via CD, and not bring things back onto it.
Okay, so
I've got to
interrupt.
You guys are having sideline conversations in a low volume.
No, I know. That's what I want to ask him. I'm going to ask him this question.
We're allowed to talk about
this. I have a question about the flash drives. You know, in order for us to print the paper ballots, you know, like the absentees that we used to do when we were using Ivotronics, I have to take the flash drive to download those PDF files and send them to the printer. So see, when I do that, of course, I'm going to then put them into my other computer because, you know, you send it to them, of course, electronically. So you're saying really we shouldn't do that then, right?
Well, it's better to attach a local printer to that computer and then not need the network.
There's
a difference between taking information out of the Unity machine uh-huh. and giving it to somebody, which is a safe operation,
okay.
and taking information from somewhere else and putting it in,
uh-huh.
which is not safe.
Okay.
And the subtlety with something like a flash drive is every time you take a flash drive from the Unity machine to some other machine and bring it back, that is a threat.
Okay.
So if you take information from the Unity machine, burn it onto a CD or DVD that has never been used before, and carry it to another machine, that's safe.
Okay.
But if you use a rewritable device, like a flash drive or a, you know, pocket, you know, hard drive or whatever, mm-hmm. and you carry it back and forth between machines, then that's a threat vector.
Okay. All right. I understand. Thanks.
Okay.
We'll move on to the passwords. Now, when you're talking about the passwords for logging onto the system, is that the passwords for the Ivotronic terminals themselves or just for the Unity machine?
The passwords we were looking at were for user accounts with administrative privileges and also public accounts on that system. So what I was commenting about there was not the password for the Unity system. They would know more about that than me, but was the password for the actual logging on to the system with administrative privilege. The ability to move around all the bits on the system, including Unity sys.
Okay.
There are three different kinds of passwords. So one password is for equipment that is deployed into the field. Okay, that is, in particular, in the past, Vibotronic terminals. The next kind of password is the Windows system password that you use when you're facing the Windows login screen. And the third kind of password is that Unity allows passwords to be set for various modules of its software. So, for example, my understanding is that the current Fedora system, as it was in June, some of the Unity modules were password protected and others were not. So this, I mean, Greg will yell at me if I get this wrong, but there needs to be a written policy for how these passwords are chosen. That is, are they chosen to be difficult enough, to be unguessable enough? Also, who has access to passwords of various strengths? That is, who has administrative passwords? Who has passwords that don't screen publication? And also, what kind of logging you should do. So that is, if access to something should be controlled so that only that it takes multiple people to authorize. And if for security purposes, instead of having one person by themselves be able to change the system configuration, if it's required that two people be in the room at the same time, then the one way to do that is to have a single password that's split into two parts. And, you know, one person enters the first half of the password and the other person enters the second half of the password. So, but anyway, whatever the exact set of events is, it needs to start with a written policy for what the threats are and what the mechanism will be to address those threats.
Okay. And we do know.
Let's give Greg a chance to see if I got that wrong.
Right, so two thoughts. One is I believe that the Secretary's requirement is actually that passwords be set for all modules. I think that they either was one of the certification requirements. So, you know, if that wasn't done, I think that may be, you know, a violation of the Secretary's protocol there. So did you say that there were modules which passwords were not set?
Yes, so I did not exhaustively examine I did not prepare a report on which module did have passwords. Working strictly from memory, I believe that the balance image, I think the Ivotronic image manager, I think does have a password, though we did not investigate the strength of that password, and the main Unity sort of the top level, the reporting manager, does not have a password assigned.
All right.
So in terms of what they were commenting about a written protocol, when I do this type of work, one thing I've learned over the years is that really good written processes are very, very helpful. And so, if I were designing the process for managing emulation systems, it would begin with a written protocol that had a set of checklists. Here's what we do in order to prepare a system for an election. We start out and we erase the hard drive this way. We install the software from this type of disk. You know, we install Windows from this type of disk. We install Unity from this type of CD. We install a third-party driver after scanning it for viruses this way. We archive that driver, by giving a copy to this person of stores in this particular way. We set this set of passwords, and the requirements for these passwords will be, these will be the requirements in terms of the complexity. These passwords will only be communicated to these three individuals. You know, that set of requirements, where there's a check sheet you can go through and basically say check done, check done, check done, check done, check done, you know, initial each of those things as you do them, sign the bottom, and then put that in a, you know, and then hold that. And then you know that things are safe because you've thought for months carefully about what it takes to do things correctly. You've documented that correct process. And then you have this instrument, the checklist, that lets you verify every time that you get all the details right. You know, what's your firewall settings should be, things like this. And then you can just run down this checklist, make sure that you're doing things right, initial them as you do them, sign the bottom, you know you haven't forgotten anything. And if there are ever any questions later on, the first thing that I'll often do as part of an audit is go back and get that checklist. And say, okay, what is the process? Right? What is the process followed? And then you look at that and you run down the checklist and you say, yeah, you know, the process, this was the process, you know, according to these people were followed. Let's talk to them. Now let's go audit the system and see if it looks like this process was followed. And then when you find problems, it turns out to be a great learning opportunity because then you can adjust your protocol, right? Adjust these documents, and now you get better from year to year. You get better from occasion to occasion. And so it really helps if you can think hard and really design a good process, a good set of instruments from the beginning, and use that. And if you do, if things do change slightly over time, if you do learn something over time, then if you can express that by modifying the protocol, by modifying the instruments, then that's fantastic because now you've gotten better, you've adapted over time, and you've done it in a way that is well understood. You've done it because every year you audit your protocols. You look at the, you know, your IT person, you know, every year goes through and verifies this process still works. If there are changes that you know, he or she believes need to be made, he writes them down or she writes them down, brings them to the, you know, to the Board of Elections. The Board of Elections reviews them, discusses them, so they know how the elections are being conducted. In some way, shape, or form, is checked against the most recent, you know, requirements or recommendations from the secretary. Maybe there's an opportunity for voter copy, you know, for voters and other interested parties to comment about it. That then becomes part of the new process.
If we needed someone to do that for us, would you be willing to consult with us? Would that be something you felt comfortable doing?
So I'd be willing to, you know, I think I'd be happy to consult you on that. I think there's a lot of footwork that in terms of preparing that you guys would need to do in terms of internal strength, but I'd be certainly happy to, you know, to consult with you to try to make that comprehensive and really, really sure.
Okay. Thank you.
So if at some point I'd like to spend 5 minutes if possible sort of briefly putting in context and then summarizing what I think are some of the more relevant findings of my work.
Okay, you can do that now if you like. That's fine, David. Thank you.
Okay. So I guess in terms of scope and limitations, there are other published studies of the electronic, not just electronic, but also, you know, Unity software and software actually from other vendors. So we do not have, you know, multiple months or a 10-person team as happened in some of those studies. Also, we didn't have the sort of non-disclosure access to the source code that other efforts did. In fact, we sure had, you know, occasional, you know, legal threats from the vendor. And so what that means is we were able to answer some questions, but other questions could not be answered satisfactorily given the time and resources that were available. So that means, you know, some conclusions we were able to draw, some conclusions, some of them still remain open. The second point, we know that the Ivotronic software has exploitable security holes, which were described 4 years ago. Also 4 years ago, the vendor indicated that new software would be released probably within that year, but no new Ivotronic software is available in Pennsylvania, you know, to this day.
the combination of Ivotronics and Unity is fundamentally, I would say, not auditable or extremely challenging to audit, because according to design, proprietary code is operating on proprietary data structures, which means the code you and I cannot examine is operating on data that the vendor does not want us to examine. What that means is if the outcome of some election seems odd, the amount of investigation that a single county can reasonably do is not likely to definitively say whether the odd thing was or was not due to a machine failure. Okay, that is, given the amount of ability that you have to get someone to actually look at the system, if something seems odd, voters report something strange, then you may not be able to determine after the fact whether what the voters were reporting was a machine problem or something else. Okay? Other systems are much more auditable. There are many ways this could be done. One way is, you know, paper ballot. Another way that, for example, is used in Australia is open source code. Okay, so there are multiple ways that a process could be more auditable than this process used. And then I guess the fourth point, which is what we've been talking about so far, is that the operation of the tabulation PC was insecure in a variety of ways, both configuration and policy. But I think it's important to look at the other two parts in terms of the picture also. So there are known exploitable security holes in the Ivotronics software, and there are, I would say, limitations by design of the auditability of various parts of the Ivotronics and Unity system.
Okay, but some of those things are state law we can't change.
Indeed, you have, in some sense, no ability to change the way that this works, and you also have, in some sense, a limited menu of systems that could be chosen from. That's right. The Secretary has certified only, six or eight or whatever systems, and you are, in fact, constrained to use one of those. But there are systems certified in Pennsylvania and in use in Pennsylvania that are more auditable. And it's also possible to run any of these different systems with a better process or a more risky process.
David, this is Vince Wither. You said that the Ivotronics promised updated software 4 years ago or so. It's my understanding, I just want to know if it's correct, that updated software is available for the Ivotronics machines, but not allowed by the state. Is that correct?
Well, so first of all, I want to clarify one word. I didn't, at least I hope I didn't say that the vendor promised.
Okay, I'm sorry.
What I'm working from is a letter in which they made a forward-looking statement in which they expected software to be released, in 07.
Let me rephrase my question then. Go ahead.
Sorry. The steps for that, the vendor prepares new software, they obtain at sort of the federal level a clearance for that software, and then the software is presented to the Secretary of the Commonwealth for review. And so the way it works is the vendor presents to the Secretary a piece of software and says, please examine and certify this. Okay, and until the vendor presents the software for certification and makes a formal request, the Secretary does not act on it. Okay, at that point, the Secretary appoints an expert and, you know, does whatever due diligence they believe. That process takes a couple of months usually. And then the secretary issues a report which either passes or does not pass the certification. So I do not personally know where in the chain this is. My guess is that the vendor has not yet presented software for certification by the secretary. That's obviously the first question to ask. I do not factually know the answer to that question.
All right. Then I guess let me ask the question just for confirmation another way. To your knowledge, the same software that we're using in Pennsylvania on the Ivatronics is the same software that's used in every place else outside Pennsylvania on Ivatronics machines?
No. In fact, there are technical reasons why in some states, I believe, at least for some vendors, different software is used in different states by design. That's number one. Number two, in Pennsylvania, I believe we are using the second version of the system which was ever certified, and other states are using software that is notably more recent than what we are.
That's what I was asking. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, and as far as the election that you audited for us, you found nothing that could be said was a problem or not a problem, basically.
So, you know, I guess let's take that in three places.
Okay.
Let's take that in terms of the environment which you ran, which is the place that I took a look at, and then let's say comments about the Unity itself, and the actual election processes as you use them there. From the perspective of the environment in which Unity ran, the operating system, the installed software other than Unity, network connectivity, things like that. My finding there was that the system, for the reasons that we talked about, was extremely brittle, right? Was not particularly secure. So my finding was that there was no active adversary there. There was nobody who exploited that. And so, from the perspective of the operating system, operating environment, and network connectivity, and other installed software. There was nothing there that would disturb the results of the election. There was no hacker. There were no viruses that affected things. There were no system failures that actually affected things. We found that, of a transient memory problem at one point, but not that actually, that we believe actually affected things. In terms of the operating environment, everything looked undisturbed.
Okay.
So from that perspective, I'm willing to tell you that there were no hackers on that system. There was nobody actively going underneath the Unity software trying to disturb it.
Okay.
There were no failures in terms of hard drives or other things that could have disturbed those results.
But there are
in part two, they've actually went about the process of looking at Unity and auditing what Unity had to, would happen on Unity, and let me go ahead with a comment about that part of it.
Okay, I just want to briefly append, Greg, we did see evidence of one DRAM error.
Right, so we did have one transient memory error, but we found no evidence that actually affected anything. And I think that's correct. There were no checksums that were bad. There was nothing that I found on that system that indicated it actually had a negative impact on any of our state. So yes, we did find that one lot of memory error, but no, I don't believe that affected anything.
Right.
Let me just, I don't believe it did.
Okay.
I think it is exponentially unlikely that it had in terms of good math that had any impact. So. So that's where I am with the transient memory error. I agree with you that management of that error, probably could have been handled a little better, but I don't think there's any reason to believe it disturbed the results of the election.
Okay. David, what do you have?
Is it a reasonable summary of the stuff that you looked at to say that while there are definitely unsafe situations that you believe that those unsafe situations were not exploited at this time?
Right, and I think there are two pieces to your statement there. One is, I think we've already had it on the back, you know, and we don't need to keep beating on it, that the medical practices were not safe. Secondly, I don't want to let this be lost in this conversation. I think that the voters of the county, you know, can be assured that in this particular election, those things did not affect the outcome of this election. You know, I don't want to let that be lost. I think that we found some management practices that need to be corrected to ensure that we have good results in future elections. But I think in this election, you know, in some sense, we got lucky. Those things didn't matter. The voters can be assured that there were no hackers affecting this election. There was, you know, there were no viruses affecting this election. There was no transient state affecting this election. There was no one logging in Windows, changing data files underneath Unity, you know, and locally affecting this election. I think they can be assured that this election, you know, with respect to those issues, was good. And yes, we talked about the management practices that we need to actually provide, be able to provide that assurance, you know, for real in the future.
Okay.
Then at the level of Idotronix and Unity, there were some, and this is essentially work from based on the tool used by Duncan Buell in South Carolina, which was designed to turn up cases of missing data and lost votes. And he did find the lost votes in South Carolina. So the results of looking at the Unity level are that there were, I believe, two precincts in which some essentially corroborating data for vote totals was not available. Okay, so the system reports both vote totals in terms of candidate X got Y votes, and then what is called valid image data. So it's not an image in the sense of something that you can identify the picture. Okay, so there is valid image data from one or two precincts which was not uploadable by Unity due to a configuration issue. Now, as far as we know, there are reported totals from the precincts, which would have come from PEB data, and we have no reason to believe that the reported totals are incorrect. Okay, there's in some sense reduced. I want to say, if you wanted to check those totals in greater detail, if you wanted to say, what was the exact pattern of votes? You know, did lots of people vote for candidate X and candidate Y? If you want to go and get that information, that would not be readily available. So in some sense, I guess all I'm saying is we have no positive evidence that any particular reported vote number is incorrect. There's a couple of corner cases in which we don't have all the data that we would usually have to back up those totals. And with respect to the Idotronix, there are questions that were raised by some voters that we were not able to answer. And the problem is it's difficult to talk about this. In Florida, there were questions that were raised by many, many voters, and the total seemed odd enough that there was a big investigation. Here, not so many voters came forward, and therefore, you know, it was not a state-level investigation, and fewer resources were put in, and so we don't have, you know, we have a less conclusive result, let's put it that way. Part of the inability for us to say exactly what those voters experienced are related to the way the system is built. Okay, so it's what we have is essentially third or fourth hand information about what those voters experienced, not first hand, and so then it's difficult to say what that means. And if we had other systems, then we would have more auditing ability. And in fact, one of the 2007 reports suggested a way that the system could collect more audited data, and it does not.
So Dave, let me ask you a question. The two precincts where some of the auditing data was missing at the community level, could that configuration error have not been corrected and then the results recalculated from the PEBs to those precincts?
So my understanding as to the easiest way to resolve this probably would be to actually ask the Iowatronics to dump bound images out to either a text file or to a printer, and then to count those by hand. I believe, if memory serves me, that in one case, I'm not going to guess, but I believe that is the procedure that was done in one jurisdiction, and the data flow on this, first before you detect a problem, sorry, before you can address a problem, you need to know you have it. And the reason why this tool was produced in South Carolina in part is because there was not a process for rigorously checking this. And so, in South Carolina, due to a related thing, some votes actually were lost in the sense that they were not collected and were not reported at the end of the election.
Right, but the focus from South Carolina back here, I mean, obviously this tool gives us a tremendous value in terms of the work, right? And so we did have it was an asset. And so we do, in this case, unlike the case originally in Florida, know about the lack of information on those, interesting information in those two precincts. We could actually go back and, in some sense, replace that information by going back to the PEBs and recalling those votes.
Actually working on another point here, which is it would be possible and probably even prudent to run a tool like this after the election is done and before it is certified. So that if something is either completely missing or if the ballot images to support some version of it, that can be detected during the cleanup process and remedied right away. So
I agree with you there. I absolutely agree with you there. I think that is an excellent audit tool, and it's very, very valuable to making sure that this thing makes sense.
Yeah. So at present, if we now wanted to go back and revisit that, the graphic data may or may not exist in the Iowatronics if it were not used for accessibility purposes in the fall. And I expect that probably the PEBs, most likely some of those were reused. The point here is that detecting that something has gone a little bit awry at the time when it does is better than looking at it after the fact.
Are you talking about downloading every image from every precinct?
Or just those two?
Or just ones that look like there are problems that things don't...
The tool allows you to find some inconsistencies and missing information. And they suggest, and as I understand it, is if you run this tool, after the election, and you quickly find out that some information is missing, in this case, because like in this case there was a configuration error, it'll enable you much more quickly to go back and get that information off the actual systems before they're reused for another election.
Now, is that something we're allowed to do here in Pennsylvania, though?
That is not something that's required, no.
But we're allowed to do it, though.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
I said, are we allowed to...
Is that required in Pennsylvania?
No, are we allowed to do it? Not because it's required.
No, are we allowed, are we legally permitted to do that? Some things we're not permitted to do. Is that some software we can use?
So my understanding is that so this software runs on Unity text output files. So, and the particular output files that it uses are ones that in South Carolina have been released as public records. And so I can't imagine why it would not be permissible to export those files, you know, onto a CD and take them onto another machine and run that tool on that other machine, because it really is essentially a cross-check on records that, at least in South Carolina, are routinely public records.
Okay.
And I think Dave hit the right part of the process there, which is we don't bring the uncertified software onto the Unity machine. We export the data onto a CD and bring it to the audit machine. So that way there's no interference with the software configuration that the secretary has certified. You know, we're not putting anything on there. We're not connecting to the network. We're not adding extra software we don't need to have there.
Okay.
Instead, we're exporting flat data files, bringing them over to an audit machine, doing a cross-check. I think that's a good process to have. There's nothing that takes away.
So that's something we should consider doing for the next election.
Those data files could be released to the public also. Right? That way, you know, people can make their own determination about whether something is missing or whether, you know, vote totals or voting patterns seem odd to them.
Okay. I think we're done, unless you have something to add, either one of you.
Can we ask a question from the public?
I think it would probably be good one is, I think there are questions about the current system that should be followed up on with the Secretary of the Commonwealth, in particular. I think that given the issues that are believed to be in the iBotronic firmware certified in Pennsylvania, I think it would be a good idea to follow up with the Secretary of the Commonwealth and say, hey, you know, you certified this thing in 06, in 07, there are these reports from Ohio and Florida, expert reports commissioned by the state government, that indicate there are, you know, problems likely to be in our software. What's the status of getting some of those addressed? So I think just following up on that, to the extent you're going to be using iBotronics, would be important. And then the other thing is, I think it would be a good idea to look at the whole system top to bottom in terms of which parts of it are auditable after the fact, and what kind of auditing can be done routinely after each election.
Okay.
I guess it's worth pausing for a moment and thanking both you guys and the interim election board for taking the time, putting the effort into this. I think we all agree that it's really important that voters, you know, have their say in the government and in the elections, and
absolutely.
You know, it took you guys a lot of effort at your end to help us get this done and whatnot. And so, you know, thanks very much for bringing the time and giving us, you know, what we needed to get the job done.
Wait, one more question.
When you're saying that we need to reinstall this, okay, I guess, you know, we would take it out of that computer and reinstall it, does that mean that we are going to lose everything that is there? Because, you know, there was a lot of data entry that you do, like, you know, with all the precincts and all the districts. Will we have to redo that, or will that be in there when we reinstall it?
Unfortunately, I would say that because of the network connectivity on that system, that system is no longer in a state that it needs to be, you know, for certification.
Okay.
You know, that I would think that would need to be re-entered. What I would actually do would be take that hard drive out, you know, lock it up in a safe somewhere so you don't lose it, put it in a new hard drive, and go from scratch.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't destroy any existing hard drive. You know, there's no reason to do that. I would just start from scratch.
In terms of the basic data, it may be possible for ESNS to have that exported into a text file form that you could then re-import. I'm not actually familiar enough to know if that's possible. I assume that's the information that you're looking to preserve.
Right, yeah.
But
because it would be, you know, setting up everything all over again. So.
But my understanding is that some of the pre-baked information is actually exportable and importable to text files. Okay. And if that's possible, then it should be possible to review, you know, a text file and see that that's not a threat.
Okay.
If we have any other questions, I'm assuming it's okay to contact either of you.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Well, we appreciate your time this morning. Thank you. We know you're busy.
Thank you. Thank you guys. Thank everybody. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks. You
thank
too.
You. You
thank
too. You.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
I've got this hard drive.
Okay.
I would like some type of a document from the county that I can take with me, handwritten, Richard can do it, that I did give this to them. I want that documented because, in reality, this hard drive does not belong to the county. It belongs to Great Britain.
We can ban it for whatever they pay for. That's fine.
Okay.
Well, the information belongs to not the county, belongs to ESNS, I guess.